All right, we started in Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. Yesterday, when we finished off the two dots, we discussed the Takanot, the Tanaim, Shehidna Yehoshua. When they came into the land, they were the social contracts or the right, the conditions by which Bnei Yisrael could exist in a manner which would be Noach for everybody, pleasant for everybody that was there. So the Gemara says that it says the way the Brisa starts up is Asarat Tanaim. There were 10 actual conditions. We read through the conditions yesterday. Today they're going to go through one by one and explain and explicate on each of them. But what stands out from the prices is that there are actually 11. There aren't 10, but the price says 10, but actually 11 that are enumerated here. All right, so we'll start with one by the by the two dots there. So number one was Shem, Miriam, B'chorshim, right, that they permitted to have your animals graze in the forest. Right, we saw that again yesterday with the story with Rabbi Shmuel, that he says that his Beit Abba, right, their family used to go and let their animals go in the forest, and nevertheless they said it was problematic. What was the problematic was that they cut through someone else's field, that they grazed, there was a small field between them and the forest. Now Rabbi qualifies this, that you're allowed to graze in the forest, that lo amran ela daka begasa. It's only a behema daka in a gasa, in a well foliaged, thick forest, in that it has to be plentiful grazing land, and an animal won't consume so much of it. If either are equal, meaning that it's a young or a thin, not young, but thin animal, right? Not the heavy duty animals, and the forest is also thin, or the other way around, it's a heavy duty animal and the forest is heavy duty, low. Choshkein gasa b'daka, certainly not a behema gasa, right? The heavier animals in a thinner forest. Alright, now, next, takana or tanaya of Yoshua was in Lachtin, etim misadot dehem. You're allowed to pick up a wood or branches from people's fields because they're assumed to be hefker. So lo amran ela behizmi behigi. The only time or the qualification for when these branches are considered hefker is only if it's from thorns and thistles, right? That the items that people don't otherwise use or wouldn't mind you taking. Aval b'shari tzimlo. Any other wood is considered either too expensive, right? Or people are not mafkir them automatically. Vafilu behizmi behigi. And even with the thorns and the thistles, lo amran ela b'mchubarim. That's only if they are still attached. Aval b'slushim, right, if they were ever cut or broken off, lo, I assume either because the Baal HaBayit was intentionally cutting them, he was breaking the branches up to keep for that wood, or once they're off already, he has his mind on them, he has dots on them that he's going to use them for his own firewood, and therefore it's inappropriate to take them. Vafilu b'mchubarim, even when they're attached, lo amran ela b'lach. That's only if they're still moist. So if they're still moist, then they're more problematic than they are helpful, right? These thorns and thistles, they just cause you a problem when they are moist, and when they are dried out, they're good for the firewood. So if they're only at the stage where they're still moist, they're more problematic, and people aren't going to be makpid if you take or rip out these thorns, probably to their benefit, that you take them out. But when it comes to dried out ones, which are ready ra'ui for to be firewood, that not. Again, and the idea is that if you bring up the branches, but not to uproot the entire item, so that you can't pull it out and uproot it, you just break off those branches that are necessary. Now the next tie is, you're allowed to take what seems like weeds, basically, from any field, except a field of platan, which we mentioned yesterday was an area that had fenugreek. Actually calls it fenugreek in it. It's a type of kidney. It's a type of legume. So in that field, we said that you can't collect from it because malula asavim, because the weeds or whatever vegetation that grows alongside the platan is beneficial to it. So if you take it out, you're actually causing a detriment to the balabai. On the other hand, if you take out the greens or the growth, the vegetation that grows alongside other plantings, whether it's of grains or of vegetation, or vegetables, then since they are to the detriment of that which is there, when you weed the field for him, you're actually benefiting him. So Mar says, Ruminu, is that really true that it's beneficial to Platan? Platan shalta imine asavim, ein mechaybin oto la'akor. So this is the price that deals, or Mishnah with, in Kilayim. Right, Mishnah in Kilayim says that you're not allowed to allow, generally, two types of items to go together which otherwise would be Kilayim. So if Platan that has other vegetation that grows up alongside of it, then we do not force him to take it out. Right? So if we don't force him to take it out, why not? Why don't we force him to take it out? Because in the end, he's going to take it out of himself. This is an idea that generally, right, Beis Din was a The Mishnah will tell us that Kilayim, they also tell us in Shkalim, the Beis Din used to go out and announce that you have to remove Kilayim from your field. You actually have to uproot the Kilayim from your field. If you didn't, Beis Din actually went ahead and either was makir the field, allowed people to enter to take out whichever weeds or whatever Kilayim was there. But here, what do we say? Oh, even though there's Kilayim growing in the field, we do not, right, we do not force him to take it out. We don't make an answer, he's got to take it out. Why? Because the end, he has to take it out himself, because it's going to be the detriment of the tlatan. The tlatan won't grow well as long as this vegetation is in there. If the tlatan won't grow well, then he has his own incentive, right? He's going to be compelled to take it out on his own without, right, any being compelled by a basin. Mm-hmm. So that. But what do you see from this? You see that the aslavim are bad for tlatan. Yet our bright that we bring over here says that the aslavim are positive for the tlatan. So I'm revere me a lokasho. As I come with zera, come with zirin. It depends what you're growing the tlatan for. Right? If you're growing it for the zera, for the seed, right? I don't know, again, here with the tlatan, I'm not sure if he's going for the seed to replant, or is he going for the seed because the seed actually is useful, right? Something that's useful. And kind of zirin is for the shoots. I don't know exactly what these zirin, again, I don't know the technical aspects of this, but whatever aside. The zera kashula. When it comes when you plant it for the zera for the seed itself, then it's kashula is a vimum kashula. It's a negative. The vegetation or the other stuff that grows is negative because it weakens it. The zirin malibah. Right? When it comes to the zirin, it's beneficial to it. The chikami ben asavim mirkava. Right? Because when it's amongst the asavim, it's mirkava from mirkav, right? Which is not enjoined here or made of a joint solution, but mirkav sounds from Rashi is a type of canopy that grows on top of the tlatan itself. So Rashi decides a mirkava, something that also appears in a delet shel kerem, he calls it, the doorway to a right an orchard. When you have a vineyard, there's a delet to an orchard, which is that there's some sort of canopy, some sort of overhang here. So these asavim provide some sort of shelter or canopy over the or protect or surrounding the tlatan, so they provide some benefit to it. So Marzai says, "Ibai deima, kanli adam, kanli beima." That the differentiation between whether it is right beneficial or not beneficial has to do whether it's planted for adam or it's planted for beima, right? Because kaven to the beima who the zara asavim nami vayilo. If you planted it for beima to eat, then the other vegetation is just as beneficial for the beima, and he needs a good mix. Here he gets the full mix. He gets both the vegetation and the tlatan, and he's happy with what he gets. Or so Mar says, "Uminayadinan." How do you know if he planted it for behema? If he planted it for a right adam? But the whole point here is that you're allowed to go in and take the asavim. Now we said there's a differentiation between whether you planted for adam, you planted for behema. How do you know when you can go in and when you can't go in? Because you don't know when it's adam or behema. So Mar Papa, sharei misharei leadam. If it's planted in clearly demarcated arugot patches, then it's clear that he's growing it for adam. But then he has, clearly demarcated patches. He knows exactly what he's growing. He's keeping it clear. On the other hand, right, lo sharei misharei, if he didn't plant an arugot, he just planted willy-nilly, then it's behema. Then he's using it for his animals because he doesn't really care about how it comes out. He just wants it so that it's available to his animals. All right, now, number four of the takanot of Tnaim is that the kadmim nitiyah b'chol makom, right? That you're allowed to take out a nitiyah, right? That you can take off branches in any place. Chutz migrufiyot shel zayit, except for
nitiyah, that it's still connected to
the ground. Yeah, it's still planted. You're just taking off branches. You're taking some of the wood that's over there. Kotein, the word kotein means to prune or to pick off, right? So kadmim nitiyah b'chol makom chutz migrufiyot shel zayit, except for these grufiyot shel zayit. Now the grufiyot shel zayit we saw before is Makos Rashi or in Tosfos, right? Tosfos over there says that Rashi says that the growth is going in the egg growth, right, on the fifth, that you have to leave over two fistfuls of zeitim when you want to take off the wood, when you're cutting down the wood in order to use the wood, in order to allow the zayit to grow back, how much are you allowed to prune back, how much are you allowed to take off? Right, that has to do with the if you leave this much or this amount or volume of zeitim on there. Tosfos, on the other hand, says grufiyot shel zayit. The word grufiyot, Tosfos says, comes from the equivalent of how we use by other animals, by other items.
Unique word for
right for zeitim, exactly. So you have zmurot and tiyot, yichurei l'teinim, grufiyot zeitim. Says that it's synonymous that the words that are used for a branch or a small piece, or a twig that comes off the tree, right, this word is a specific word that is used by olive trees over here. Now, the Gemara once is explained on this. Amar Peirush Rabbi Tamchum v'Rabbi Brayis Mishum Zaken Achad. So they explained Bezayit Kebeisa. When you want to know how much can you take off of the tree and still have it grow back, what do you have to leave? So it says in the Kebeisa, in that the height of the tree has to be the size of Kebeisa in order close to the trunk. You have to leave a Kebeisa beyond the trunk, it sounds like, you know, beyond the stout part of the trunk, you have to leave a Kebeisa to allow the Zayit to regrow itself. That's the maximum you can cut it down to and still have it grow back. Right, the kanim, abzayit kabeisa b'kanim. I'm sorry. You have a kabeisa in the branches. Ubi gafanim minapkak. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Right, b'kanim ugvanim. Right, when it comes to kanim and gifanim, when it comes to other branches and the vineyards and the vine, minapkak ulamalo. Then we look from the pkak is the kesher, it's the knot in the tree, from the knot in the tree and above. As long as the knot, you're above the knot of the tree, it'll grow back. Right, so when it comes to other trees, you go from the ovo and not from the chodo. Right, so chodo, you know, is a point. Right, ovo, what does that mean? So Rashi gives two interpretations as to what the ovo shalilan is and not mi chodo. So you look in Rashi down below, it's mi evo shalilan. He has actually another girsa, which is evo versus ovo. Evo shalilan mi piryo, kolomer manafim arakim v'dakim. From the fruit of the tree means the very thin or new branches, right? The very soft, thin branches. But not from the thick branches, which are the equivalent of a trunk. They have a trunk-like status to them. So you can cut off the thin, now they know the thin branches, but not the thick branches. That's one possibility. Right. You can take it out where the thick part of the tree. That's in the center of the growth. Chodo is the pointed part, like the center line. Which sounds more like chodo, because that's the pointy part. That's the stuff that goes up, the center line that grows up. That main branch, or main branches, you can't take off. Whereas the smaller side branches, you are allowed to take off. Alright, now, minachadash. You can only take off from new branches that are not already producing right, fruit. I mean, stuff that's grown newly this year that hasn't produced fruit yet, right? But not stuff that's already producing fruit, because it's already producing fruit. You can take it off from a place that does not see the sun, right? As opposed to makom shuruei tachama, but not a place that does see the sun. There, the Medrash Darshan's on the bracha, right, of Yosef. And so the bracha of the Medrash Wad Shamash is that certain fruits are benefited by the sun. It sweetens the fruit, and some are sweetened by the yareach. Right, so the Medrash Wad Shamash tells you that the trees, it's necessary or necessity of the tree to be exposed to the sun. So the branches that are exposed to the sun are what bringing the mitikut haperot. That's what's making the fruits are sweet. And therefore, we don't want you cutting the branches that are benefiting the tree. You benefit from the inner branches that are not seeing the sunlight, right, which aren't necessarily benefiting the whole tree. So you're just taking off a single branch, you're not taking off something that's benefiting the fruits or the whole tree itself. Alright, number five. We said that a new spring that popped up all of a sudden, but it's popping up in someone's private field or private area. We say that it belongs to the entire city. The person can't say, "Oh, it's in my field; it belongs to me." The Tosa says, "Wait, we have otherwise. We know that there are other places that it does belong to you." So Tosa wants to differentiate between a case where you made the effort to bring out the spring, if you dug out the spring, or you were the one who brought it about that there was a spring here. In that case, then it belongs to you personally. But if it just comes up, may love. That doesn't entitle you in any way to the benefit of the spring, and it belongs to the entire city.
So
a brand new spring that comes up, the entire Bnei Yer entitled this. Rabbi Bar Huna, you have to compensate him. If you're going to come in here, people are going to kick out, they have to ruin part of his field. Now he has this spring that's coming up there, he can't use a part of the field. and he's giving them all this water that's coming out of Tziyo, Lake Yilchatokabate. Also, it's not like him, means that you do not get compensation from this. And this is, you think you have good mazel that the Mayan came up in your field. There's a bad mazel now because you lose part of your field, plus you don't right, keep all the water. The only benefit is the water's close to you.
Right,
Exactly. Umechakim bima shel Tveria. Right, and we said over there, umechakim bima shel Tveria, that you're allowed to fish in the Kinneret. That's what we said. Ubevajlo yifros kala. Again, the be'amidat tespina. You can't put up these fences. As opposed to, you can put nets in there, right? Of tadhu b'shutotu mechmarot. You can use nets and some sort other types of fishing instruments, but not a fence. That they used to build some sort of trapping fence in the water, because when the boats go along the water, then it's going to get caught on these fences. So we don't allow you to put those out. That will cause problems with the boats. Tarabana b'shana hitnu shvatim zim zesh lifros kli'a v'yamidat tespina. The Shvatim agreed one to another that they wouldn't put up these fences in order to cause problems to the boats. About Tadu Brishtot Mechmarot. Tana Banan, Yamashot Tveria B'chalkosh Naftali Aita. So what's the whole big deal here? The big deal is that the Kinneret is part of the Chelek of Shevet Naftali. Lo Oda Shonatam Lo Chevel Cherem B'Zeroma. That not only did he take the Kinneret, but he had a border, he had a beachhead along the Kinneret in the south and all the way around. So even though his bull was the Kinneret, nevertheless, you got a strip of land on the other side of the Kinneret, okay?
Just like
Nassau once. Right. No, but they have that in the Ardain, the Torah also, when it gives the demarcation of the Ardain, it's the Ardain plus a little strip on the other side, a beachhead on the other side. Not necessarily that it ends in the center of the Ardain, right? That goes. So now, McMurray.
I mean, they just have use of it. It's not that, because else you mess up the shavit on the other side.
No, but it belongs to them. The other shavit bull only begins, right, at the beach, after the beachhead. Naftali, it's totally encompassed by Naftali, and that's why it says, right, Melo Chevel Erem Bidroma, okay, Mash Nemar Yom Bidroma Yerasha, that it will inherit Yom Bidroma, right, not just the Yom itself, but the Darom in the south and the beaches around it. So Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Tushim Shibaharim Bechazkat Kol HaShvatim. Things that are detached on all the mountaintops belong to all the Shvatim. Umichubarim, those that are attached to the mountain, those that are fixed to the mountain, b'chazkat oto shevet, belongs to that shevet. And Rashi says the reason that is, it's very interesting, Rashi says, why are things that are detached belong to all the shvatim? Says that it's no worse than the shlal and the malkoach. And it's no worse than all the booty and everything that when they conquered the nations, when they went to war, any metalkulim that they found belong to all the shvatim equally. So those who over here, when they give their tzion, even as talush, anything that's not mechubar the karka, is not necessarily the possession of that. Right, the shevet. Only things that are mechubar the karka belongs to that shevet, and that tushim is jointly owned by all the shvatim.
I mean, this tonight is only the very beginning. Of course, that explanation.
It sounds like it's right. I mean, once they have planted, and once they take possession of the property, then if it becomes private property. Maybe it wouldn't be the case. Although here he's talking about the tops of the mountains, which sounds like maybe they're not inhabited. They remain uninhabited, and therefore only like trees that are growing there belong to them. But rocks and branches, things on the floor, would be available to anybody. Right? Right? Every part, every shevet got a har, got a mountainous area, got a shvela, right, a plains area, got a negev and an emek, got valleys and a negev. Now everything here is easy, except for the negev, right? When negev we associate with the south, how can everybody have a piece in the south? Not everybody shevet has something in the south. So what's the definition of the word negev here? Rashi gives in the negev, it says negev is eretz Sadot ubikaot, right? It's a large, a vast areas of land that people plant, or fields, right? Plant fertile land that you can plant with fields, open fields. Shukorim nefayna kach nifay negev. Isn't it? Shukosha hahi nibuva. All the time it is dry. Shencham el seli lanot, because there are no trees that are shading the area. V'chamaz zarachas zarachas uminagavata. The sun is always beating down on these areas and drying them out. Again, the Negev, right, what we think as the, right, Negev is the south, but Negev is really the term from Nagu, which is dried out because it's the desert, meaning that the sun is speeding at all times. So that all, Shvatim also had an area which was open like that, that didn't have any trees planted up, but was fields that were going to be planted, that would get beaten up by the sun and get dried out by the sun. So that's it. So every Shevet had these four types of
land. It's not the shot of the Pasuk.
Right, I'm not,
No, I'm saying, you get all the, it says in
Vayalu Banegev, Vayavot Chevron. Again.
But it was the south.
Right, so the negev, that's a good question about it. Generally, negev is not, south is either. Right, so negba, the question about why negev is considered the south. Right, generally, also yamina is also south. Right, yamina is south, right, because that is a directional time, yamin. Right, when you face east, yamin is to the south. Negev might be a lashon mush'al, which it might be, again, like aguna, we said before, it's a lashon mush'al, which is that negev really means dried out. Now, since the Midbar Yehuda is in the south, therefore, because that's negev, that's why negev became associated with the south.
Or
the that it's a lashon mush'al, since it's a lashon mush'al, right, negev, which we associate with being daroma, and even the Torah uses it as a term for daroma, is because that area is nagub, that area is totally dried out, the desert. And then, when we go use the word negev, we associate it with south. But the true meaning of the word, like the true meaning of aguna, which is an anchor, also means over here, nagub means dried out. So maybe that's what the Gemara is afterwards. Although, right, the poshuk shat in the pasuk would be that negev is south. Shnever pusu lachem bo haramori velkosh kenav. Right, so you should go to the haramori velkosh kenava barava bahar uba shvela uba negev. So you have all these four areas. Uba chovayam, and then the coastline. Chen ata mose beknanim uprizim umemorim shilifneim. Right, because it says the elkol shchena. Says the Emori, and all of its neighbors. All of its neighbors have all of these items, which are what? We have the Har, the Shvela, the Negev, right? So you have this, and the Chofayam, the Shvela. So you have all these areas. Alma, Shchena, Vavu, Chafayavu. Everybody has that. If that's the case, then when the Shvatim came and took, each Shevet was taken from different parts of these nations, and they each got a Chelek that included these four types of topographies, right? These different types of topographies.
In a tour guide person, they can define these by elevation.
Right.
So it would be just say by, you know, each Shevet had, you know, lands at all different elevation levels.
Right, because it's pretty easy in Eretz Yisrael to do this, because you have the Shvela and the Chof HaYam on the western side, you have the center line, which is all the, right, the Harim, the mountains run through the center line, and then to the eastern side, again, you back go down to Bikat HaYarden. Mm-hmm. So anybody who has, generally, you could hit, as long as you have strips across, right,
yeah.
Horizontal strips, or just even they get halfway across, you're going to, by definition, have both types of areas. You can have Harim that are included in there. Right, the Nifnim L'Rechoya Gezer, so that you could go defecate after, behind a fence, what's the big deal, right? But there we said, even though it's full of saffron, saffron is a very expensive spice, even today, you take small amounts of it, it's a very expensive spice, so even though you're going to his field, which is planted with expensive stuff, you're allowed to go in there and defecate. Again, doesn't seem to be so problematic, we're not letting you go and trample over his stuff, just that you do it right by the fence. The real heter here is allowing you, there's a fence that surrounds the area, and what happens afterwards, he needs toilet paper after he goes to the bathroom. So in their day, toilet paper was a tzror. My brachos disguised by some sort of smooth rock that they used to use as the way to clean themselves after they went to the bathroom, their toilet paper. So now, you're allowed to take out of the fence, you're allowed to remove a tzror from the fence, even though there's a fully made fence there, you're allowed to take one out in order to use as your toilet paper. Even like it's on Shabbos, it's not considered an akira, it's not considered a harisat binyan, in order then you do it on Shabbos. That's it. All right, or tiltul muksam, right, that's not any of these problems. Mazutra chasida, shakul mehader. Mazutra chasida was nice enough that he used the toilet paper and he put it back. It was nice of him. And then he used to say to his servant, right, Lamachar, whether you have the kirtz or not, Zil Sirke, and the next day he would go back in and say, go plaster it back in. So even though he broke it out of the wall, when he placed it back, he would just stick it back in. Shabbos, where he couldn't put it back in, he couldn't seal it back in. Nevertheless, the next day he would ask the servant to go back and actually fix up what he broke. That was a nice thing. So even though the t'nai was that you could use it, nevertheless, he went to the Tanimi Shuzadin and he made sure to replace or to fix that which he used in the field. All right, Umehalchin. The next one, number 8, is Mechalchin Bishvilei Yerushut, Ashadeved Riviyashnia. That you're permitted to walk in the empty fields after the harvest, before the planting means before the second rainfall comes, Yuzaimer Chashuvan. So between that point, people are generally not Makbid, they allow you to walk through their fields or take shortcuts through their fields because, right, there's no reason not to allow you. There's nothing going on in the fields at that time of the year. Says our fields, right, are even when there's dew on it and people walk on it, it's problematic for it. So, I mean, if it is detrimental to the field, then one could object to people going through there. The only time that you say that people are permitted to go through there is when it causes no detriment. There's, you know, zen and everything low cost there. The people who are crossing through it get a benefit, and those that own the fields are not getting any, it's not detrimental to them. Over here, the Republic describes is that our fields is actually detrimental to them, and therefore you could object to people going through them. Umasalkimla today, the Rachim is number 9, that you're allowed to go to the sides of the roads even though you will cross or step into private property a little bit. The dose of the Rachim, which we described yesterday, is that during the winter season when the mud is there, people chat through it, it creates grooves and sorts of ups and downs. When it hardens, when the sun comes out, you have these, it makes it sometimes untenable to walk or to drive through there, because you have these big piles of dirt that are sticking up, or pointy pieces that are sticking up. So we allow you to circumvent that and walk slightly into the private property to go around it. Shmuel and Rav Yehuda, Avishakli Azli Beruchah. Shmuel and Rav Yehuda were walking along the way. Avmistalek Shmuel Tzidei Drachim. Shmuel went over to the side to avoid, right, stepping in these things. Amri Rav Yehuda, Naim Shina Yeshua, Filu Bebavel. Wait a minute. Shmuel and Rav Yehuda are found, Rav Yehuda is the Talmud of Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel, where are they found? Rav and Shmuel are found in, Rav later on is like, but Shmuel was found in Bavel. They established the Shivot, so I have Bavel. So he's walking in Bavel, and he still went out to the side. He says, what? These Tzayim that Yeshua made are even in Bavel. Not in Bavel, where there's a Yeshuv Yehudi, where it's a Jewish land, but even in Chutzlaretz, where it's not a predominantly Jewish area. Nevertheless, these Tzayim that Yeshua made, these are social contracts, these are ideas, these are things considered to be common elements that of law that everybody would agree to because they make it easier for everyone to live. Rabbi Rabbi Chia v'shakle v'azle v'orcha. So Rabbi and Rabbi Chia were walking along the way. This is likely in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi was in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Chia is Talmud. He stopped the city at Drachim. Right, they went over to the sides of the roads to circumvent again these yesedot that were there. Have a kamasiya v'azle Rabbi Yehuda ben Kenusa kamayu. Rabbi Yehuda ben Kenusa was in front of them, and he refused to walk over to the side of the road. He was jumping from these pile to pile, whatever these pointy things are, from one to the next. And he was skipping along the way in order not to go along on the private property. It's very interesting. It says, who is this guy in front of us who's acting like that he's machmir on himself, that he's a big guy, that he is what? Rashi calls it mechse kiyahura. Right? That he's taking upon himself.
You could also interpret this question as a
right, so that's what Gemara says in a second. But who is this who's acting with such a midat chasidut chedid? He's going with nimishur tadin, but not unnecessarily going with nimishur tadin. This is an area that. But they think here is acting in a manner which is not considered normal, and only someone who is classified or qualified to be a chasid can take on such a chumrah and act in a manner like that. Samarli Rav Chia, that's my condition, right? Lo kemoano, lo kegonano. Hey, Samarli Rav Chia, Shema, he says, Shema Rav Yehuda ben Kenusa Talmidayu. Maybe it's Rav Yehuda to my Talmid. V'chol ma'asav l'shem Shemayim. All that he does is l'shem Shemayim. So he is on that level where he can take an act with him, Shemayim, that day, and he can act it. Timatu l'gabei chazyeh. So he says, when they caught up to him, I mean, it wasn't so hard, he was skipping, they were walking along the side, but they caught up to him, Amel Yilav Yehuda ben Knusa, ask if you were not Rav Yehuda, Gazretinu l'shakech, zir to the parts, we would put your legs into a chain, no, but it means cherem, we would put you into nidui for acting in such a manner. You see that it's important that a person, even though a person wants to conduct themselves with nimishut adin, right, wants to be machmir on themselves, that's not something that one demonstrates in public, and that's not one that someone who carries themselves to measure, it's only in, right, if they're qualified to carry themselves and to hold such chumrot, because they are called the Shem Shamayim, right, that we're suspect with Nimishur Tadin, which is a positive thing, in general, with Nimishur Tadin is a positive thing, but not when it's done in a showy or public manner. One has to be careful that when it's done in a showy and public manner, that it really is done with Shem Shamayim. Alright, so now here, next
and
number 10.
And it's appropriate for him to do it.
Right, so it matches with his level. Right, it's a famous story. My brother-in-law tells me a story about Rabbi Willie in the Mechse Kiyora story. It says in the Yidu-based Medrash. The Yidu-based Medrash does not face towards Eretz Yisrael. It's turned in the wrong way. So many people, similar to the shul here, many people are no tzedlat tzad, right, a little bit on the tzad. So, and some people actually face totally. They turn horizontally on there and they face towards Eretz Yisrael. So, one person came up to Rabbi Willig and he wanted to know that if he turned during davening, that if he faced the other way, so that was Mechse Kiyura. Right, was that Mexico Yura? Because not all the Rabbanim did it. It wasn't necessarily not everybody did it. It was Mexico Yura. So Rabbi Willock said to him, he says, I want you to know, he says, I want you to know that it's not Mechtek Yehura, it's Yehura Mamash.
It's
my brother always told me that story, which I said Mechtek Yehura. But that's it. It's an important principle, Mechtek Yehura, which is that the person has to know when they act in a certain manner, when they take upon themselves to act outside of the tzibur. Right, one thing if you'll see Mishur Tadim when you're treating other people nicely and when you're doing other things, when it comes to chumrot on a person that he's taking on and then he's marrying himself to be, right, Yoter Kadosh, or in a higher elevation spiritually, then one has to be very careful and not to make displays of that and then be sure that it's done the shame shamayim. Alright, number 10. Atoeh ben Akramim, Mafsig v'yored Mafsig v'oleh. Said someone got lost in a vineyard, has the ability to break branches or break off parts of the vines in order to allow himself the ability to escape from being trapped in these vineyards. So, Darabanan, Aro'eh,
Chavir. That means direction, so that's the type of cutting, or
so no, Oleh V'yoreh, meaning that if he goes up and down, meaning that he's allowed to go in and out, Oleh V'yoreh, meaning that he's allowed to come out of the field, if he has to go down from the field, whatever it is that he needs to do to get out of the field. He's stuck in the middle of this vineyard, so he's allowed to go. Darabanan, Aro'eh, Chaviro, To'eh, Ben Akramim. Someone who sees his friend lost in a vineyard. He can go down, he can pluck out, break branches, he can get in there, whatever he needs to do, right, to get his friend out of there. Ola derech. They'll get him back to the city or get him back on his way. And he himself can do it. The person himself can do it. Gemara says, my v'chein. What's v'chein? If someone else can do it on your behalf, certainly you can do it yourself. So Mao the same of Khaveru the Yodalaikum Salaik the Nipsog. Now we think maybe only his friend who is aware of how to get him out of there, so he'll do the least amount of damage, so he's allowed to break the branches or to clear it out in order that he can come through. Avhudalo the Yodalaikum Kasalik, he doesn't know where he's supposed to be going. What, he's just gonna go around there breaking things up, it's gonna cause a lot more damage. Go Nipsog Nahadre Nahadar Bay Mitre. He should go out to the fence. And he should follow along the line of the fence and walk on the fence away. So mashmalon, that he's permitted to, wherever he is, to break the branches to get himself out of there. Mark says, Hado Raisu. Wait a minute, why is it that Tarkano over here that you have to go help your friend when he's lost in a vineyard? That's a Dindo Raisa, Titania. Hashava Gufo Minai. How do you know that a Shavas of Veda does not just apply to objects in the Talclim? How do you know that it applies to the person themselves? That you must return him? Tamalo Marvashi Voto. There's an obligation not only to return his object, but return him himself, meaning that you have to take care of another person. You have has major implications here, right? And helping other people out who are in trouble, especially when they're physically, right, in danger, if you can do something, or in a position where they are lost, you have to help these people out. So Mar says, De'oraisohu, the kaibe mitre. Now, mi de'oraisoh, right, the situation is, right, talking about when you are going around the sides, around the fences on the outside. Right? Atuhu, takin de mastigole, mastig viore. So Yeshua added on this idea. So if it was just the oraisa that you had to return him and help him out, you'd have to send him out the way of the fence. I mean, get him close to the fence and then follow the fence way out. But Yeshua added was that wherever you are, you can get him out mastig, right? Meaning that you can break branches to get him out, you can clear a way or a pathway for him to get out. So instead, the oraisa is, yes, you have to help him out, but you help him out by doing it the long way or the harder way, which is to get him out to the fence and then take him out the way of the fence. The easier way is just to get him from where he is to where you are, and then you break branches to clear a way or pathway so that he can get out. That was what Yeshua was mitakein, that we allow such a experience. I don't know exactly, obviously there was, in their day, being caught in a vineyard or lost in a vineyard was something that was either dangerous or difficult because, right, I mean, God, you think about getting caught in a vineyard, how lost could be?
Like
you've
seen, like
cornfields, I feel like cornfields, right. If you set the corn is very high, if it's lost, you could be lost in there for hours. It's very difficult to get out. Right. Without perspective, it's very hard to get out of these places. But I assume that it's something to that effect, although I don't know personally how that would figure out. And now, the number 11, which is, we said it was 10 in the bright, but here's number 11. We'll make mitzvah ponim mekomo. That wherever a mitzvah dies, tanam mekomo. He acquires that place and he's buried on the spot. Viriminu. Is that really true? Amose mate mutal bitaratia, a person who finds a mate that is lying across a reshuta rabim, actually calls it a reshuta rabim, these times ayin amat, sinamot. Right? Mefaneu the amin itaratia, or the small itaratia. You remove the mate and you bury them to the left or to the right of the way. Of course, because we don't want the tumah lying on the middle of the street. They bury him right there and then nobody can go, anybody who goes to that road can't go by there. So you move them to the right or left. Stay bur, u stay near. seems from this, the way Rashi explains it is that on either side of the Sratia, if you have on this main thoroughfare, you have a choice between putting him in a Seibur, a field that is not planted, versus a Seibur, which is plowed, a plowed field and an unplowed field. Finale is Seibur. There, we tell you to take him over to the unplowed field because it's less damage. Right? Seibur versus Seizera. If it goes to a plowed field versus a planted field, Finale is Seibur. We tell him to put him in the plowed field because, again, that causes less damage to the Zera that's already planted. Are you shtem burot, shtem mirot, shtem zruot? If they're equal on both sides, mefneu l'makom shirtei. You can move them to the side that you want. So the Gemara says the question over here is: wait, why can't the balabatim on the side object? Meaning, see, if a mason kone mekomo, right? So then he gets wherever he lands. Then how can the person who's making the decision to move the mate move him to either side or wherever he wants? Why can't the balabatim say no? He was kone mekomo, or he was closer to the other guy. If he's closer to the other guy, you put him in his field. Why are you bringing him over to my field? That's what I'm repeating. B'mutal ha-meitzar. Right? So that, since he is on the border, meaning that he's across, stretched across the entire Rishut HaRabim, so he's equal distance between the two borders on either side of Rishut HaRabim. Since you're already permitted to remove him, it's like Muksa, right? Once you have permission to move the Muksa, you can take it wherever you want and put it down wherever you want. Once you can pick it up, once you can take the mate up, once you have permission to take him out of this location because he's found in the Rishut HaRabim, you have permission to put him down wherever you want.
Okay, now that the Gemara has gone through the entire Braisa, so Gemara points out we had 11 items. The Braisa started out saying, Yimrei Asara, that it says there are 10 Tanaim that Yeshua was put together when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. Hanei, Chatzari Havian, they're really actually 11 that we enumerated. So how come you said 10 and then enumerated 11? So Gemara says, now, how come Bishvilei Rishut, Shlomo Amra, that one Tanai where people are allowed to or can walk through fields when they're not in use, meaning after the point of the harvest, before the point of the planting, that people have permission to walk through people's fields. That is a din that Shlomo said. Kidetanyo, we have a price that says, Harishu kalu peru tab min asadeh. He's finished with his fruits in the field, meaning he's harvested everything, brought it in. The eno meniach meni adam li kanes betoch sadeh. And then he doesn't let people walk through his field anyway. Ma briot omrot olav, what do people say about him? Mahana yesh leploni. What benefit does he have from keeping people out of his field? Umar briot mazikot lo alav. And what type of damage do they cause to his field? There's nothing in it. They walk in the field, it's really not going to cause him any problem. So it's basically zen and that visit lo chaser. Everybody else benefits from being able to walk through the field, and it provides no loss or detrimental side to you, so why not let them go through? So Alala Katuv Omer, on him the pasuk says, Miotov Altikra Ra. If you have a chance to do good, don't do bad. When you have the opportunity to be with Nimishur at the din and to do things that benefit others, or do things in a proper manner, that's the context in which it's used in the Gemara, Brachot, even though someone didn't hold the Halacha was this way, but since, anyway, someone else was performing the Halacha and we gave him the opportunity to perform it in a better way, or according to all the Shitot, better to Miot Tov, do the right thing, Valtikra Ra, don't be Kara. The Gemara says, Miktiv, Miot Tov, Valtikra Ra. First of all, where is that? There is no such puzzle like that. It's a nice expression, right? Better to do good than to do bad, or if you have a chance to do good, don't do bad. But there is no such pasuk. So when it says in, there is such a pasuk, tiv ki hai gav. Now there's a similar type of idea that's expressed in Mishlei, and this is why the Gemara says that this takana or this tnai was from Shlomo Melech, because altim natov mi balav, biot lekel yodecha lasot. Don't withhold doing good to others, right, when Hashem gives you the opportunity to do it. When Hashem puts it in your hands to provide to others and do good for others, then you shouldn't withhold. This is again a case of Zenene Vizel Chaser. Hashem's provided you with the ability to provide and help others out at no detriment, at no cost to you. So if you have the ability to do that, why not provide for them? And if you withhold your field from them when it's no detriment to you, and it gives them a tremendous amount of benefit, that is a problem of Hashem giving you the ability to provide, and you are not providing.
All right, so the Gemara now asks, the two lakot, there are no more takanot, right, besides these takanot, ba'ikad the Rabbi Yehuda. There's a takana of Rabbi Yehuda. What's the takana of Rabbi Yehuda? The Dan Rabbi Yehuda, Omer b'shat al-tzad v'alim, time that you can take out, people are taking out the fertilizer, taking out the dung, Adam says, v'lod r'shut ha-rabim, you're allowed to place it in the r'shut ha-rabim, but so broke, post lo shemim, you're allowed to leave it in there for 30 days, today she ain't yishop, r'gle adam r'gle emos, it'll be trampled on by people and animals. I'm not kidding. Israel Darius. That's one of the conditions that Yeshua created when they were among the land. That was one of the conditions. What was one of the conditions? That you're allowed to place your fertilizer out there to benefit from the trampling of the Rishut HaRabim. It's not considered to be Matriya, the Rishut HaRabim. Right? Vayika. Right? Vayika, the Rabbi Shmuel Ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan, they're all broke. We have another principle that was established by Rabbi Shmuel Ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan, and Tanya. Mishrael benosha Rabbi Yochanan member of Omer Tanai Bezinu she is there yirei l'tom tzedei chaveru v'kutzei tzocho shal chaveru l'atzil nachil shalom. So that a person who has a beehive and the bees fly over to his friend's field and they're all now sitting on a branch or a part of a tree over there, that he's able to go over to his friend's field, cut the whole branch and bring them back. If he tries to bring them back one by one, he won't get them. If he cuts the whole branch off and brings them back, he'll be able to save his comb or whatever, honeycomb or nesting that they have. So he brings them back. Then he has to pay him. He has to pay him. I mean, obviously he's permitted to take it, but he has to compensate him for taking it. It's not based in Uchi. Is this
Shofech Yonu? That's a very thick branch.
I think so. I didn't see any definition of it, but it seems to me like some sort of trunk-like branch that the bees are sitting on. It's not based in Uchi. Is this Shofech Yonu? Umatil Dukshano. Two people are walking along. One of them has Yain, one of them has Dvash. And the barrel of the Dvash is breaking. Dvash is very expensive. So then the other person can pour out his wine, and he can take off the Dvash. He can help the other guy save his honey. When his friend sells the honey or gets the benefit from the honey, he'll pay him back the wine that he lost to pour out to save his Dvash. Two people are carrying along the way. They're carrying loads. One's carrying on their chamor wood or a thin branches. The other one's carrying pishtan, which is more expensive, flax. And the one who has flax is either his chamor died or he's unable to continue with him. And the guy with a thin can dump his load, take on the pishtan. And we talk, the guy gets paid back for his meitzah, we talk pishtan shel chavero. Again, that he will get back, paid back for the wood that he threw away through the proceeds of the pishtan the other guy's selling. Shema ten, he shall surely sell the aretz. These are conditions that Yeshua inherited or was morish the land to Bnei Israel. Where it says, v'chidai lo kamrina. We're talking about dat yichidim. These are dat yichidim. The other brayta was a stam brayta. Here you have yichidim, tnaim that are yichidim. But we have another case. What ki'at Rabbi Avinam Rabbi Yochanan? These are moraim. Not talking about tnaim over here. These are moraim. Echad ilan ono tel atok tzeh chavero v'echad ilan asamuch lamei tzar. A tree that flows over into your friend's field. Or a ilan that's right on the border or comes into the Rishudarim. Mevik v'koreh. Right? Sh'am natin in chil Yeshua Yisrael ataretz. You can come along, right? And cut it down or clear it away, because that's one of the reasons that Yeshua gave, one of the conditions in which Yeshua gave the land. So if you have an Amora here, it's one thing if the Naim are Yechidim and they argue on the Brisa, that's fine. Now you have an Amora, Rabbi Yochanan, who's saying that there's an additional item. If the Brisa says 10, how's Rabbi Yochanan arguing on the Brisa? Ella Mantana Sarat Naim, Shidna Yeshua.
These are Amora, this is the present.
Rabbi Avner and Rabbi Yochanan are Moraim. All the others that we quoted before are Tanaim, because they can argue on the Braisa, but how can Rabbi Yochanan argue on the Braisa? So it says, who is the author of this, what we thought was the Braisa before, Vasarat Tanaim? That is, Vasarat Tanaim, Yeshua, Rabbi Shua ben Levi, who is really an Amora. It's an Amora who is the author of that, so that, if that's the case, if he's an Amora, then Rabbi Yochanan can, right, argue on him, number one, and number two is that it's not definitive, because there are other Tanaim that argues. So when he's quoting the Brezis, Rabbi Shub and Levi, and there's a possibility of other Tanaim that argue on him. So Rav Via Mibay Katsio, right, Rav Via Mibay Katsio, Mani La Behejo, he said explicitly, Rav Tamkub, Rabbi Bryce, Amrei Mishum Zakinachat, they said in the name of one Zakinachat, Umanu Rabbi Shub and Levi, Asarat Tanaim is in Yeshua. They said, explicitly said, Rabbi Shub and Levi who made the statement about this Bryce. The last thing just to mention is that Tosfos over here points out that we're going to see a Gemara further on, that if a person's walking around with his barrel of wine, and another guy's coming with his barrel of honey, and the honey is starting to spill, the other guy spills out his yain, and he goes to collect the honey for him, that he has no claim from this guy for his wine. The only thing he can claim is charo, that he's in thing as a poel, that he worked for him, he did some benefit for him, so he has to pay him for his work, but he doesn't have to compensate him for the wine. Over here, the Bryson says that you do have to compensate him for the wine. Doesn't see it's two possibilities. One is that this panel argues on the Mishnah further on. It doesn't like that. In the end, he says there's a difference between whether you do it voluntarily or the other guy presses you into service. If you voluntarily spill out your wine, you're not entitled to compensation for it, because that was the decision you make. And the guy could say, listen, I could have saved my flash. I didn't need you. You did it on your own volition. So I don't have to pay you for the wine. I have to pay you for a palel because you're helping me out. I don't pay you for the wine. On the other hand, the Tanai Yeshua is that he can, against your will, force you to pour out the wine and help you save his Dvash. Once he does that, once he obligates you, right, to pour out your wine, then he has to compensate you for the wine because he pressed you to pour out the wine to save his Dvash. That was tough here.